You can catch the man's work for USA Today by visiting your local newsstand, hit the closest major hotel lobby, or use Reason. Log on to usatoday.com. Become a follower on Twitter with the handle at George Schroeder. A good, rare Thursday to you, Mr. Schroeder. How you doing?
Man, I'm good. How are you?
All is well. All is well. You off vacation now? You guys had a nice, relaxing trip. All went well, I assume?
It was really good. It was really good. Off vacation now for a while. We're out in Colorado. Enjoyed it. Tons of fun with the family and visited some old friends from our days in the Eugene area who now live in Colorado. It was a great time.
Awesome. Let's start with Jerry Jones. No, not that one. The district attorney in Monroe, Louisiana, who decided the two Alabama players, Cam Robinson, Hootie Jones, will not be prosecuted, drug-related, weapon-related charges. But beyond the evidence, his public comments that these guys have worked and sweated, so he doesn't want to ruin their lives. Should that even have a role, and does those choice of words maybe provide cause for concern?
Yes. Let me just put it this way. It's not the best way to say that. I understand sort of the sentiment that if you feel like it wasn't a big-time case and you feel like these guys deserve a break and they're first-time offenders and you're not going to go after them, you think they're relatively good kids. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm saying if you believe all of that, you can sort of make that case. I thought the way he said it was you know, kind of didn't work out well. I didn't think that was the best way to say it from his standpoint. And if that's exactly what he meant, then I thought that was an insult to a whole lot of people who work hard and don't get themselves into trouble. And by the way, maybe aren't staring at the idea that down the road they might be NFL players making millions. So I thought it was an insult to a whole lot of law-abiding citizens who never get themselves into that situation and need to catch a break.
Now, I wanted to bring up, we saw the Cleveland Cavs won the title, and one of the things, LeBron James says, I want to rest. I don't want to play in the Olympics. We've also heard guys like Kawhi Leonard say that, Damian Lillard. And, you know, we've had the dream team, the redeem team. The NBA guys, for my opinion, is like, you guys focus on your pro team. Do you have a thought or preference as to college players, NBA players repping Team USA?
I don't care one way or the other. I mean, I think the one thing about it was that, you know, when they first went back to the pros back in the 92 Dream Team, they were so much on such a higher level than the rest of the world, which, by the way, was using pros and had been for a long time.
Right.
That, you know, let's go back to the reasons that they did it. They did it in part because the rest of the world's pros were now beginning to beat up on the U.S. collegians who were part of the Team USA. And so they went to the pros, and there was zero contest. It really wasn't a contest at all. And then after a few years, it wasn't really a dream team. It was made up of B-teamers and C-teamers from the NBA, and they started being pretty competitive in those games and even losing some. And then there was kind of a resurgence of interest from the upper-level elite American pro players. And now maybe what we might be seeing now is a little bit lessening of the interest. And I think it's possible that it's just sort of a cyclical thing, Steve, in that, you know, they'll go with a lesser team of, you know, of pros that are not quite as big in names, maybe not quite as talented. Although, by the way, some of them will be really talented.
Sure.
And they'll probably win anyway. It'll be close. And maybe they'll, you know, maybe they won't win, and then it'll be a national nightmare, right, a big crisis. But then at some point, the next batch of NBA stars will become really excited about playing for Team USA. And I think it's just a cyclical thing. I don't think the answer is to go back to the way it had it before and play, you know, college kids. First of all, the college game is so different now that you're not going to have the same sort of upperclassmen, two-time All-America type of guys that you had back in the 70s and 80s. Those guys don't really exist, I mean, at least not in great enough numbers to put them on an Olympic team.
No,
now, they're in the pros by the time they get to where they, you know, would have been juniors and seniors. So it's a different game. I don't think it even works to try to put college players in anymore.
Huh. I'm almost embarrassed to say, I didn't even consider that. Back in 2008, you were on assignment for the Register Guard. You covered the Summer Olympics in China. We're about 6 weeks away from the 2016 Games. Lot of concerns, be it Zika, water, economic unrest, visitors targeted for crime. At this point, would you have reservations if your bosses came to you and said, we'd really like for you to go to Rio and cover these games?
Well, and they didn't, and I was a little bit disappointed. It just didn't work out. And several, you know, we have a pretty large crew that covers the Olympics every 4 years.
Right.
Kind of hoping to go. I'm not. That's fine. There's a whole lot of college football work to be done in August, obviously, so that works out. But, no, I wouldn't have great concerns. I mean, look, obviously Zika is something that we're all going to deal with one way or the other at some point. I mean, it's probably going to creep up the United States at some point, and I don't know if weather patterns and climate will help. But, yeah, I would be concerned a little bit about Zika. But the crime and things, I mean, if you think back to the last few Olympics, there's always been, will they get this finished on time? Will there be mass protests? Will there be economic unrest? It's almost like almost every location has its own specific set of issues. Maybe that wasn't the case with the one in Beijing that I covered, but there are a couple things there. They were wondering whether there would be serious protests, whether the people would take the opportunity to protest against the communist regime there,
right,
and whether that could cause turmoil depending on how the Chinese decided to put down any such protests. And so there were some concerns there. What generally happened was, it being sort of a totalitarian regime sort of probably played in their favor in terms of creating and keeping order. I'm not in favor of the idea generally, but it did not hurt them in creating and keeping an orderly Olympics. That said, there was a whole lot of facade being shown to the world that wasn't necessarily really what was going on in China.
We're talking with George Schroeder of USA Today. Obviously, we talked all season about the NBA and Golden State. It seemed as things soured the last three games, the Warriors didn't handle adversity exceptionally well. Some whining about the refs. Some people I heard use the term they got a little entitled. So after the record-setting regular season, but even though they made it all the way to Game 7 of the Finals, how do you think history should fairly treat this team?
No, you didn't win at all. You can't be considered one of the top couple of teams of all time, in my mind. I mean, I think is that fair? I don't know. Maybe it's unfair. Maybe it ought to be more about the regular season, or the regular season ought to be weighted more heavily than I'm weighting it. That said, we do measure these things in terms of all-time greats by rings, and they don't have one. You know, they're not getting rings. They were up 3-1 and couldn't close out the Cavs. And that, look, all power, you know, all credit due to LeBron James and his guys. But, you know, I don't think any of us – in fact, you and I talked about it on the air. We didn't give them much of a shot once the deficit was 3-1. And I don't know how many people did outside the Cavs locker room, frankly. So much credit to them. But I also think there was a bit of a fold by the Warriors involved too. And so I got to tell you, I think it completely diminishes the legacy. It makes the 73 wins kind of more of an asterisk than it does this has to be considered one of the best teams of all time. Let's compare it to that Bulls team. I don't think you do compare them now, because you've got to cap it with a championship.
Now, on the other side, talked about some of the great events you've gotten to cover, all the great college football and Final Fours and Olympics, what we just saw. First of all, I mean, I was 4 the last time Cleveland held a parade. You weren't even born yet. But the manner in which it happened, the way LeBron played those final three games, we feel like we saw something that will hold up as the years pass. And, you know, years from now, we talk about some memorable championship performances.
Yeah, I think so. Now, let's just say, you know, most of the games in that final series weren't great games. But that doesn't make it not a great finals. And that last game, frankly, the basketball played wasn't great. And down the stretch, you could talk about how the Warriors basically, you know, went completely cold in the last 4.5 minutes and didn't score. And it's like, what happened to these guys? And a lot of it was their own doing. I mean, everything from that tremendously bad idea and even more poorly executed flip behind the back pass by Steph Curry attempting to get Klay Thompson, just throws it out of bounds. It's like, you know what? That's the kind of pass you throw in a meaningless third quarter in February against the Sixers, not down the stretch in the finals in Game 7 in late in the fourth quarter. But you could talk about things like that, to them just climbing shots, to taking bad shots, to having horrible possessions. By the way, a lot of those possessions that they have all season long that they hit those crazy shots with. But you know what? I think I'm going to choose to remember when they had the layup coming and LeBron James, you know, put the big block on it. Now,
yep.
You could say there shouldn't have been sort of the double pump. You can say you got to go straight to the hoop and jam it. You can say a lot of different things. But when the ball went up in the air, LeBron James, you know, went really high and blocked it. I think if that layup goes in, and it was probably going in, I think the Warriors go ahead and win the game. And when they didn't get it in, that was the momentum that Cleveland needed to win it. And then Kyrie Irving hits the one big shot that anybody hits in the final few minutes. And, I mean, everybody was missing on both sides, and he pulls up and hits the big three. So, you know, I think you should choose to think of Kyrie hitting that shot and LeBron blocking that layup attempt and say, wow, that was a fantastic finish, and the Cavs deserve a bunch of credit.
Yep, definitive moments for sure. As we continue with George Schroeder, USA Today, obviously as a resident who covers sports in the Sooner State for the next 10 days or so, pro hoop fans there are going to be on pins and needles with Kevin Durant, a free agent. What your colleagues in the media might be writing or saying, your gut tell you KD is leaning in any direction. And if he decides to leave, how devastating to that franchise?
Well, really devastating. If he leaves, you know, they've built everything around him in Westbrook, and they built a really, really good nucleus and what looks like a, especially coming down the stretch in the playoffs, what looks like a really good young nucleus that they sort of rebuilt around them, you know, after a couple of years worth of injuries and things where they didn't quite get to where they wanted to go. You can look at that squad and go, wow, if they bring everybody back, they might be the best team in the league next year. Now, you can argue for somebody else, obviously. But, from the Thunder standpoint, you're like, wow, they've really got something coming back, if he comes back.
Right.
And it would just completely devastate him. Now, you ask for my gut. My gut is he'll re-sign with Oklahoma City. And my gut is it will be in part because it's a move he wants to make, and in part because it makes sense for him to sign a one-year deal. And then the salary cap changes next year, and he can command more money, whether it's at Oklahoma City or elsewhere. Then we can go through this whole thing again next year about whether he's staying in Oklahoma City or going somewhere else. But the money we'll be talking will be vastly different, even for him.
Yep.
And so my gut is he signs a short-term deal, and we talk about all this next year. When, by the way, he won't be the only one. Russ Westbrook's deal will be up next year, too.
Yikes. One final thought. You got to see Buddy Hield of the Sooners up close and personal, a four-year player who just got better and better. And
yeah, the Ducks saw him up close and personal, too, out in Anaheim. Remember that?
Oh, absolutely. He had a huge game. He's also not only a player who improved and ended up elite, but he's got that reputation as a terrific young guy. You incorporate all that. How do you like his game transferring to the NBA?
Well, all that stuff is great stuff. I don't know how any of it translates to the NBA, though. That's the thing. I mean, he was named one of the Big 12 Sports Persons of the Year today, which, you know, that's not just about being on the court. It's about who you are, you know, as a player, I mean, as a person too.
Right.
So that, you know, that's kind of a nice honor. That won't mean a thing come either draft night or once he gets out there practicing and playing on whatever his team is. You know, that won't mean anything. I think he's going to be a good player. I get the argument that he's, you know, 22 or whatever he is, and so they think that the majority of your development has been done by then, and so that's why you see these guys take these sort of more raw 19-year-olds over a more polished 22-year-old, because they think there's a lot more development to be had. I get that. I think he's still got some more development to do. I think he'll be stronger with the basketball, and I think he's got sort of the confident gunner's mentality, but not selfish, and yet still sort of feels like a killer when he's out there shooting it, that I think he's got a chance to be really successful in the NBA. And I don't want to compare him to Steph Curry. I realize that was the easy comparison during his college season. But I think something approaching sort of the Klay Thompson type of thing is what his ceiling might be, which would be pretty good.
Yeah, you know, that's not bad.
Klay Thompson is sort of Robin to Steph Curry's Batman, has really emerged here over the last, you know, year or so. And I think you're looking at a guy who could do that. He's 6'4". He's got long arms. He's athletic, probably more athletic than he's given credit for. And I don't know. I guess if you wanted to ask me, is he going to be an NBA All-Star or just an impact player or just a solid rotation guy, I would probably go in the middle there and say I think a safe bet is impact player.
All right. Well, he seems like an easy guy to root for. You can follow George on Twitter, at George Schroeder. Catch his work, usatoday.com. Always appreciate the time, and thanks for us getting started on a Thursday. The flexible George Schroeder, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, glad to do it. Thank you, Steve.
All right, take it easy.